welcome to Chalk Radio, where medical experts from Children's Hospital of Orange County share their knowledge about keeping kids healthy and safe. Today, Dr. Sharif Terriman, a Chalk pediatric neurologist, Dr. Jonathan Miner, a pediatric sports medicine specialist, Jen Allsweet, a speech-language pathologist, and Molly O, physical therapist and rehabilitation supervisor, are here to discuss concussions. Dr. Terriman, Dr. Miner, Jen, and Molly, welcome to Seacrest Studios.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
So recently, our concussion group came out and we went and saw the concussion movie with Will Smith, which is a pseudo-documentary, I guess you should call it, about a physician, Dr. Omlu, who was the first physician to describe a condition called chronic traumatic encephalopathy in a NFL player and the controversy that followed with that in the NFL. And as a pediatric neurologist and our team here of pediatric concussion experts, we do treat a lot of pediatric patients who come in with multiple head injuries, multiple more severe head injuries, as well as the run-of-the-mill concussions related to sports and football in particular. And so what I wanted to ask of our team is to really just have a roundtable conversation about concussions, some of the questions that parents have, patients have, and then talk a little bit about what we do in our concussion group. So maybe I'll start with you, actually, Dr. Miner. What kind of thoughts do you have regarding when parents come to you and ask, what is my child's risk of playing football or playing soccer, of getting something like chronic traumatic encephalopathy?
I think that chronic traumatic encephalopathy it's always a difficult question to answer. The science really has not proven exactly how many concussions or what type of head injuries are going to ultimately lead to chronic traumatic encephalopathy. However, there's always a fear of what we don't know and when to draw the line. Recently, we've actually had some new information come out that has identified chronic traumatic encephalopathy in both soccer players and hockey players. So I know that football is not the only sport that involves chronic traumatic encephalopathy and other head injuries, but perhaps it's the big highlight now, just knowing that the NFL makes a lot of money and they benefit from all of these players playing on Sundays to promote their own sport. But CTE is difficult.
Definitely. And for those of you that may not be totally familiar with CTE, essentially it's a condition in which we know that probably repetitive head injuries or head trauma cause basically progressive neurodegenerative disorder. And what happens is this accumulation of this abnormal protein called tau that accumulates in the brain and it changes the personality, the way the patients think, the way that they function. And we saw in the movie last night, based again on real life, that many of these NFL players were actually committing suicide, having difficulty with concentrating and doing basic daily functions. And it really did destroy their lives and destroy their families. But one of the nice things about the movie is we saw that Dr. Omlu really pushed to try and protect his patients. And although he's a forensic pathologist and they were already dead, he was speaking for those that couldn't speak. And he really did seek out to find the truth and to really try and help his patients. And so I think that this is a nice segue to maybe ask Molly and Jen, from a rehabilitation perspective, what kind of things do we do here at Chalk Children's to help rehabilitate patients who have suffered a concussion? And then the second part of that question would be, what kind of things do we do to try and prevent the next concussion from happening? Because again, although we may not understand fully what causes CTE, we do know that if we can prevent athletes from getting additional head injuries, that's common sense, a good thing.
I think one of the main things that you touched on already is we really need to, like Dr. Omlu did for the dead, we need to do for our living children is speak for them. Try to determine what the impairments are after the concussion based on what the child is telling us and what the family is telling us, and really help guide the patient and family to a healthy recovery. So a lot of the things that rehab focuses on for physical, occupational, and speech therapy is looking at the impairments that the child has physically. So can they coordinate their movements? Can they participate in sports? Are they deconditioned from being out of sports for so long? Jen can speak to the cognitive impairments that a child would suffer from following concussion and how speech therapy can help regain their function. And in addition, occupational therapy, if there's fine motor impairments, some occupational therapists focus on visual impairments, as do physical therapists. So we're looking at the whole body and how the child can integrate visual, cognitive, and executive function into being able to perform their daily tasks, their school tasks, and their physical activities.
As a speech pathologist, when I see them in the hospital, it's a lot of education on what to expect as they reintegrate back into school. I think a lot of these kids are high athletes, high achieving school students that they don't want to let the other affect. So I spend a lot of time educating how to reintegrate back into school, what to expect those first few weeks, and then what to expect down the line. And for outpatient, we see them when they tend to start failing in school a little bit more, that school success doesn't come back as quickly as they'd hoped. They start having difficulty organizing themselves, taking tests, following through with activities. So we tend to see them a little bit more post-concussion and help with that recovery.
You know, Dr. Miner had mentioned it's all about balance in some regards. And, you know, when do you draw the line? And I think those individual decisions are very important to a family. And our job is really to guide and educate them. In a New York op-ed piece, Dr. Omlu actually called for an age of consent for participating in impact or contact sports. And I just wanted to see maybe what the group's thought is with that.
As a pediatrician and sports medicine physician, I mean, I support Dr. Omlu's idea. But I think that at the same time, we have kids who smoke underage. We have parents who put their kids behind the wheel when the highest incident of death among younger, late teenage kids are automobile accidents. To ask a child to consent for themselves, I think is reasonable, but ultimately, I think it's really the parent's responsibility for trying to protect their child or to take that responsibility and allow their child to be exposed to something as rough as football, tackling, other high-impact head injury sports as well. I think ultimately it's a family's decision because a 14 or 15-year-old should have the ability to decide what they want to do. Perhaps it is one sport that they're really interested in, and I wouldn't want to take that privilege out of their hands too when they're perfectly capable of making a relatively adult decision.
As a mom of three boys, I have faced this. In fact, we just got the question in our house, can I start flag football? And I do think that I am assuming that responsibility. And I think that all parents need to go into team sports with their eyes open. What I appreciated about the movie last night was that it really instilled to me to not necessarily take them out of football or these sports, but to go back to those leagues and say, what are you going to do to help prevent some of these injuries? For me, that's what the big awareness of that movie was last night, is we're not going to stop the Sunday Night Lights or Friday Night Lights, but there are ways to prevent or decrease. And that's, again, going to be my job as a parent to advocate for my child.
So Dr. Couturas, who also joined us for the movie, and we actually also had Dr. Susie McNulty, who's a pediatrician in the community, and Robin Beauregard was one of our physical therapists. You know, we have a pretty big team from a lot of different walks of life, which I think is actually pretty unique to Chalk Children's, because I think a lot of the concussion groups that I've worked with and interacted with in the nation either are strictly sports medicine, strictly neurology, strictly neurosurge, strictly neuropsychology. And I think we have a very diverse group of physicians, rehabilitation staff, neuropsychology that really goes out to try and treat these kids, but also to raise awareness. And one of the things Dr. Couturas, who helped write the AAP guidelines, recent AAP recommendations on some of the contact sports, included actually expanding out some of these non-contact leagues so kids could participate in football or modified. There's actually new rules that are being more rugby style sports being put out. So maybe what are your guys' thoughts on, you know, these modifications to the game? And I know in rehab too, you know, we teach kids, you know, not to spear tackle, for example, because we know that that has some significant impact as well. So thoughts on that?
Looking at some of the guidelines this year where they reduce the number of contact practices, we have seen a reduction in the number of concussions that are occurring in practice settings, but it really didn't have an effect on the number of concussions that were occurring in the game settings on Friday night or Saturday during the high school football games.
It's hard to know. So we've made changes, right? And there's legislation that's being put out there to try and protect the kids. But one of the challenges is that we don't have as much data as we'd like, and there's not enough pediatric research on the topic. And we really do need to push forward, and that's one of the things that hopefully our team and other teams in the country are going to keep looking at when we make these adjustments to the game, adjustments to how patients play or athletes play. How does that affect concussion? And although common sense dictates, right, if we reduce practices, that might reduce overall concussion burden. But the reality is it might make those concussions that they do sustain worse because they don't know how to play as well. And so there's always this back and forth. So we were talking last night that the AAP and some of these other guiding bodies got a lot of maybe pushback about their guidelines weren't strong enough or they were kind of weak. And the reality is we're constrained by a limited amount of information.
I think it's important to take this information and really look at how we're playing games, how we're playing sports. And while we're not trying to eliminate football or eliminate cheerleading and soccer and all those sports that we see a large number of concussions, I think it's important and we need to do our due diligence as physicians and healthcare providers and researchers to look at, can we play differently? Can we do things differently to protect our children and to protect our adults so that in the future there are less incidences of CTE or other related brain injury conditions?
So I just wanted to get real practical and then we'll wrap up. I wanted to just mention, you know, if a parent has an athlete and they suspect that they had a concussion, what things should they do immediately? If they're suspecting that their child or their patient or athlete has had a concussion, what things should they do immediately?
I think the first thing I would do is, even on the sideline, recognizing that if there's a question of a concussion, making sure that the athlete is pulled out and allow the symptoms of concussion to either present or not present, and just safely remove an athlete with question of concussion from the athletic arena.
And then is there a time period that they're allowed to go back? I know the answer to these, but is there a time period that they can go back into play if they seem fine, but you were kind of concerned?
I would give a reasonable, ideally the rest of the game, just keeping them out, but even 15 or 20 minutes, allowing them to do some aerobics conditioning or aerobic training on the sideline to see if symptoms will present might be a reasonable option for some people. But really and realistically, waiting until the game is over with, seeing how they feel the following day might lead to the best decision making for whether or not the athlete has actually sustained a concussion.
And I usually recommend, actually, even if the athletic trainer or the coaches are not familiar with using the SCAT3, S-C-A-T number 3, which is freely downloadable online. It's open source from the British Medical Journal, part of the Zurich guidelines for concussion treatment. They can actually learn how to do that. There's YouTube videos for parents to learn how to administer that themselves. So if there ever is a question, you know, most of the time, it's really, if you're in doubt, you really should sit it out. That's CDC has really pushed that as well. And I think all of us will push to that regard, that if you're not sure, it's better to not take the chance. Because aside from CTE, there's also this condition called second impact syndrome. Essentially, when a patient has had sustained a head injury, if they get a second head injury in close proximity, that can be life-threatening or devastating neurologically to the patients. And so we're trying to always avoid that. And unfortunately, there are cases, and we've seen actually some cases this year and every year in football or other sports that are high impact, high contact. In terms of physicians, we do use physicians in the community to initially start seeing patients and things like that to treat them. One of the things that is a kind of concussion sentiment or concussion treatment is resting. And there's been recent studies that was published in the Pediatrics that talked about what the optimal time of resting is. And so, is there an optimal time of how long a patient should be like shut down in a dark, quiet room? How long they should be out of school? Maybe you guys can talk a little bit to that.
I upfront would discourage the dark, black room. And we really talk about maybe 1 to 3 days away from social interactions, giving somebody cognitive and physical rest, and then reintroducing, especially the young student athlete, back to their primary job, which is to be in school, trying to use their brain and pushing through at least a little bit with their return to school.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So we've seen that, you know, they actually randomized kids 2 days off school versus 5 days off school. And they found that the kids that actually were off 5 days had a longer recovery time than the kids that had 2 days off. And so we really want to encourage kids to slowly reintegrate back into the classroom. And I think, Jen, you talked about that a little bit.
Yeah, I think that sometimes when the kids are admitted to the hospital or they come to the ER, it's a sports injury. And a lot of times parents forget about the impact of that sports injury. And so I spend a lot of time with the families, helping them understand how to reintegrate back into school and what should the expectations be. They can't go back to their normal everyday, read 12 chapters and write a, you know, 6-page report. So managing those expectations, because if they push themselves too quickly, that's when we tend to see the more persistent symptoms and then the prolonged difficulty in school. And a lot of times families don't equate the two. Sometimes parents don't even think about letting the school know that there's been this injury if it hasn't happened on the field. They just think, oh, once they recover, they're fine. And so just understanding that sports injury can impact school is really important.
That's huge. I mean, we see these, I'll see the kids 3 months after Jen sees them in the hospital or after you see them in the clinic. And one of the biggest things that I experience with these families is that unfortunately, the schools aren't supporting that return to learn process as well as I think they could. And in some cases, there is good school support, and a lot of cases there is not, where the child is afraid to ask for accommodations to get them through because they feel there's repercussions either from their peers or from their teachers. So really reaching out to our school system to support and have a better return to learn plan for them. And I know that Dr. Terriman has been working with Orange County School District on that. It's one of the biggest things.
Yeah, Dr. Mark Lerner helped us organize a really nice session a couple months ago. And we had a lot of representation from many of the school districts within Orange County to learn about return to learn. How do we implement that in the school districts? And our group has done a lot of outreach in terms of talking with sports teams, talking with the YMCA, for example, to educate parents, athletes, people who engage with students, athletes, et cetera, you know, random groups to really try and educate on concussion, concussion awareness, what to do after a concussion, those types of things. Because that initial early appropriate treatment helps prevent those kids from having to come and see me as a neurologist. And that's my goal, is actually to put myself out of business, right? That's the goal. And so as much as we can do to prevent kids from having re-injury, prevent them from getting that initial injury, and then treating them as aggressively and appropriately as possible in the early intervention stages is very important. I do also actually want to talk a little bit about maybe the differences in gender and concussions. And so we do know that there's actually a higher rate of concussion in females, percentage-wise, of athletes than in males. And maybe, Molly, you can talk to that a little bit.
Sure. I think research has shown that females traditionally have smaller and weaker neck muscles, and they're not as equipped to withstand the forces that cause concussions and head injuries. So strengthening their neck muscles following a concussion is one of the key things that we'll look at in their rehabilitation after the initial symptoms of pain and disability resolve.
Yeah, there's also been some talk about maybe that there's actually a reporting bias. And so that sometimes male athletes are less likely to report signs of a concussion or less likely to tell that they've had a concussion as well. And so this is part of also changing the culture of sports, right? Because it's been so much of a suck it up, get back in there, do as much as you can. And in reality, we know that especially for concussions, that's not something you want to be hiding. And so actually part of our education process is also talking to athletes to say, if you see something, you need to report it. It's not selling out. You're actually protecting your fellow athlete. You're not selling them out by saying, hey, you know, so-and-so's not acting right on the football field, is getting confused on the plays, et cetera.
I actually, on that topic, did some research last year while I was up at Boston Children's, where we reevaluated the reporting of concussions in high school football. And back in 2004, in a study done in Wisconsin, they showed that only 47% of high school football players were actually reporting their concussions. So we have lots of more awareness, education, kids and coaches, parents, physicians, everybody is much more aware of concussions these days. And we anticipated seeing a pretty significant rise in the reporting of concussion injuries, but we actually showed that the, at least in the Boston and Ohio areas of our country, only about 55% of high school football concussions are being reported still. So we're still missing out on opportunities to educate and make concussion awareness.
And a good tool for parents or listeners to go onto is actually the CDC's website. They have a very nice heads up website that has resources for coaches, athletes, physicians, parents. Everybody is involved in terms of sports-related concussions, and that's an excellent resource. Another great resource also is the www.choc.org/concussion. And we spend a lot of time trying to put as much information as we can for parents to learn about concussions, coaches, and other physicians as well, to learn about how to treat concussions and some of the things that we do as well.
Back to the under-reporting, I think at the end of the day, it's a lot of athletes are going to do as much as they can to hide symptoms. I think we're still seeing that. So it is the parents and the coaches and the teammates' responsibility to really be the eyes and ears and using the SCAT, using those tools to identify right away that there is an issue rather than having the athlete say, I'm just going to wait until the end of my season and then I'm going to report my symptoms.
Well, I wanted to thank you all for listening and joining us today. I think all of us are going to give Concussion Movie with Will Smith about Dr. Amlu a 2 thumbs up. And we also give the Chalk Children's Concussion Program 2 thumbs up. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening to Chalk Radio. You just heard Dr. Sharif Terriman, a Chalk pediatric neurologist, Dr. Jonathan Miner, a pediatric sports medicine specialist, Jen Allsweet, a speech-language pathologist, and Molly O, physical therapist and rehabilitation supervisor, discuss concussions. Stay tuned for more episodes and health topics from Chalk Radio. Visit chalk.org/blog for more information or follow Chalk on social media. We are at Chalk Children's on Instagram and Twitter, and we are at facebook.com/chalkchildren's.